Again, my name is Brian, and I'll be the moderator on today's call. My email address is editor@marketingexperiments.com. If you have any problems with the phone system or the notes page, you can email me at that address, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. The URL for the notes page is marketingexperimentsblog.com, and we will ask you to refresh your browser on that page several times as we add some data and other notes. We will also ask you to visit a few links in notes, and those should open in a new browser window. Some of them will include screenshots that you may have to resize to their full size to be able to view the screenshots correctly. Again, the URL for the notes page is marketingexperimentsblog.com. The email address for questions is questions@marketingexperiments.com. I invite you to email your questions anytime throughout the hour, and we will attempt to answer them on the phone. At this time, I'd like to introduce Dr. Flint McLaughlin, who will be the primary presenter for this afternoon's Landing Pages web conference.
All right, Brian, thank you very much. We're going to get right into the material. Let me lay out for you that we will look, first of all, at certain data sets from our research, and then we will move forward into actual insights as to how we can help you think through the process of optimizing your landing pages. With the growth of pay-per-click advertising and email marketing, maximizing conversion rates on campaign landing pages has become a priority for many online marketers. And the need to build campaign-specific landing pages is, of course, widely accepted. In our most recent research, we addressed, first of all, the preliminary question of which changes in my landing page will deliver the greatest increase in conversion, but then more specifically, which elements on a landing page have the most impact on conversion rates. We're going to share with you data from a series of experiments that perhaps will help you. At the same time, I'm going to ask you to do two things, and Brian, I'm going to need you to forward me questions directly. We want you to fire your questions off to Brian, and he'll give you – go ahead and give him that URL again, Brian.
Sure.
All right. Email address.
You either email me at editor@marketingexperiments.com or questions@marketingexperiments.com.
In addition to this, and this is an opportunity, and I'm going to be doing this extemporaneously. I'll work through my notes with you, but apart from our notes, I'm going to invite everyone that is on the line who would like to submit a particular landing page, that is, paste a link to the URL and put it in an email and send it to Brian. And actually, I'm going to have you send it not to Brian, and I don't want to confuse you, but I want to send it to our director of optimization, and that will be J, as in the letter J, dot Ellis, as in E-L-L-I-S, as in Sam. J dot Ellis.
That's wrong. It's Jimmy dot E.
Okay, Jimmy.
He's getting a really bad response with that email address.
I can't even get to my car without Sarah to get the keys and find them for me. I'm a absent-minded professor, so you'll have to forgive me. We're going to paste that link to Jimmy's address into your notes here. So if you hit the refresh page, you'll see Jimmy's address. And Jimmy, go ahead and give it to him.
It's jimmy.e@marketingexperiments.com. So it's J-I-M-M-Y dot E as in Ellis.
Okay.
At marketingexperiments.com.
If you'll start sending those pages to Jimmy, we're going to pick perhaps just a handful of those that you send and actually discuss them towards the end of this next section when we actually get into insights and guidelines and basically best practices that we've arrived at through this continual series of research projects that we've been engaged in for these past several years. So send your landing page, and perhaps you can get some insights, and at the same time, we can all learn together as we think through the most important way to improve a page. In a previous brief, we provided an introduction to landing page optimization, and if you've not already reviewed that report, you may want to do so. It is in your notes. At the same time, I want to share with you the test that we engaged in to develop a new control page. This first test covered a two-week period in April of 2006. Our primary objective was to determine whether a small number of specific changes to an offer page would improve overall conversion for a company selling a hypnosis product, which is a good niche for the internet. And so we applied something called the Marketing Experiments Variable Cluster Testing methodology. And in this way, we were able to test multiple variables with a single factorial, almost A-B split test design. And I want to show you the old page, and that's all I want to do right now, Brian, is I want you to drop a link into the former page, if you would, to their notes. If you're new to these calls, we use a very simple system because we don't want to have any glitches, and we're not charging for the calls. We just need you to refresh your notes page from time to time on the blog. And if you will, you'll see that there is a link in there to the page that we were undertaking in the optimization project with. So I'm just going to give you a second to click on that link and to look at that page.
And again, if your browser resizes the image, you may have to zoom in on it. I think most of them do that now.
All right. And Brian, I just wanted to get into old page one. Yeah, you may have to zoom in on the image. And we have to use an image as opposed to the live page because this page is no longer live. And so you'll have to forgive us if you have some resolution issues. This is a screenshot capture. This was the page. It was a successful page as it stood and was profitable, quite profitable. But we were asked to optimize it. And we apply a formula, a conversion index, which is a very critical formula that we won't get into at this point, but it actually outlines step by step each element that should be tested and what its particular importance is. Some of you may have seen that in our lectures in New York or in our certification program. We don't have a lot of products on our site, as you know. We actually have no products. The only thing we do is offer certification and online testing. And we teach this in that program. But if you'll look, you'll see here the actual former page that we began with. And I'd like you to think as a marketer, what would you do to improve this page? And how would you set about a test treatment for improving it? Having looked at that, I want to just take you to the new page, which again, if you'll look in your notes, you should be able to go to the new page. Test one, new page, it's link three in your notes. This is an optimized version, and I want to point out for you, optimized as it is not nearly as optimized as it could be. We improved the credibility factors, including the photo and credentials and signatures, and there's also greater visibility given the testimonials, and there's a number of changes that were made, and we'll get more detail about these types of changes later in this program. We set up the test. We did what's called a variable cluster test. And if you'll look in your notes again, Brian's going to drop a chart in. Let me know when that's ready, Brian.
Okay. That'll just be 1 second.
And this new chart that he's placing into your notes will show you exactly what we were able to achieve in terms of conversion. And also,
there you go.
All right. So refresh your browser. You'll notice the overall conversion increase was 40.7%. And that's very serious. This is a digital product that's delivered over the net. The primary costs were in production. So when you take the same marketing budget and you increase the actual revenue by 40.7%, you're getting a serious increase in income and in profits. And in this case, there's a lot more that can be done. The photo itself needs to be tested. That is, conversion needs to be tested with something there besides the photograph. There's no bolded eye path in the actual text itself, which is very critical. The price and how that's laid out on the left. The add to shopping basket button could be optimized with better wording. That button should have an immediacy, a promise to get something when they click on this, as opposed to simply an addition to a basket, which is not particularly exciting. The wording is very critical on the button. It's three-dimensional. It's much stronger. There's a signature. It's a personal letter. It's vertical format. It's short paragraphs. If I was going to do this and could get away with it, depending on the design of the site, I'd remove almost the entire left nav, make this a long copy single cell. In fact, I'd take the top pages from this site, the top products, and give them all their own special landing pages with long copy cell and minimal to no navigation, and then customize one for each channel. But despite the fact that all of this has not been done, the site has been improved by 40.7% in its first round of tests. Now, it's important to note that the headline and body copy and all of these other things can, you know, are identical. But the improved iPath, improved credibility factors, all led to the overall conversion improvement. Most of all, and I think this is a key point, and this is something where MEC differs than what you typically hear in the marketplace, but it's based on all of our research in this area. We do not typically test a single variable in an A-B split test design like a headline unless we're asking or trying to answer the question why, and we need to drill down to a specific. But if we're trying to, first of all, just improve financial performance, we cluster the variables. In other words, we'll make multiple changes to the same page, form that into a treatment, and through a methodology that we use, test that and establish a new control page. Get a major improvement in financial performance, which gives us a lot more money to test with, and then go back and drill down on individual elements. And I can't explain all that right now because we need to move to more landing pages, but this is an example of how that gain was made in 14 days. It could have taken a year to test those elements independently, depending on the traffic volume, certainly multiple months. And we use the variable cluster design to accomplish that. It's something we teach in our certification program. All right, so let's go on. In this case, the next round of additional tests would include, and this is just notes here, with and without the photograph, with bold text to strengthen the iPath, with changes in the button design, with differences in left nav and no nav, with differences in the incentives packaged with the offer. I would put a stronger PS underneath it. There needs to be a time urgency factor built into it. There needs to be, well, a number of things that could be tested. For more, by the way, on just how we do that, some of that, you could see some of these links that we've got in here, and they'll be in your notes, but let's go on. I want to look at test two, and in test two, we were seeking to optimize page copy with a sequential test. This is a very primitive test design, very primitive. But our second test sought to determine the optimal presentation of information for a discount healthcare offering. Unlike our first test, this was sequential. Each page ran independently for 2 weeks. And we're going to show you the results. Brian, go ahead and drop the chart in. Small lift, 14%. And as we have seen over and over again, long copy will outpull short copy. But the long copy in this particular case was defeated by short copy by 14%. Now, we're aware that there could be mitigating what we call historiosity effects in terms of validity errors because of this being a sequential test. And for those of you that may not know what I'm saying, in an A-B test design, every other page that's presented on your site, you know, is alternated so that you have an A page that the first visitor sees and a B page that the second visitor sees, and that goes back and forth. But in a sequential test, you'll have a period of time during which you're testing one against another, and there can be mitigating external factors that will impact that. And you've got to be careful of that. But nevertheless, quickly and expensively and without any additional testing capabilities, they discovered a result, and they can take that result and build on that with another set of tests. You can read more about what we've done with long copy, which typically will outpull short copy over and over again. But in another link that we have, what link number is that in the notes, Brian?
That's number 6 in the URLs.
Number 6. Jimmy or Nick, anyone on my phone, do you want to comment on any of these two tests before I move on? And feel free to interrupt me because I know you men were overseeing a lot of this.
No, it's Nick here. I think you covered pretty much everything there.
Okay. All right. Well, feel free to jump in with thoughts or points. I know we're going to get a little bit into the how-to part, and I'm sure you can help us a great deal when we get there. Let's move to test 3, optimizing price presentation. This was a different type of test. It's an A-B split test performed on behalf of the same group that we just did in test two. This time we sought to answer two preliminary research questions. If we create two page versions, one with the price shown and one without, which would result in users clicking deeper into the site? Many of you debate over where to put the price. If you've studied long copy, you can take a long copy direct mail piece the way it's presented on the internet and written by one of these copywriting experts for special packages and typically B2B or B2C, like Corey Riddell's work or something, print it, and it'll be 25 pages long. And the price will be hidden somewhere in those 25 pages near the end. And they're not going to put it up front because they're going to make sure that you get that you encounter as much of the persuasiveness in their offer as possible before you actually see what the cost is. Then they're going to use a formula for emphasizing that the cost is far less than what you would expect. They'll use language like, you would expect to pay X for, and then they'll list the things that are of value, and then they'll come back and say something like, but for a limited group of people, by a certain period of time, you know, and they'll give a limitation, and they'll, it's available at Y. Now, I don't like some of that because it's hype-driven. We'll talk more about that later. And a lot of times, it's just plain lying. They'll use JavaScript to change the expiration date and keep pushing it forward. Now, I understand you may have an expiration date that you move forward one time for reasons because of you have room for more enrollment or more products, but I mean changing it every night, every single day, and doing it deliberately, making a false deadline, it's just lying. It's just wrong. I don't like it, but I'll tell you something. Even if you're a big group like some of our research partners, you know, Fortune 100 group, you can learn from this. We had a major publisher, one of the largest in the world, resist for some time our efforts to try and take a vertical or a horizontal presentation of a page and turn it into a long copy letter because they're a respected group. But we turned it into a long copy letter that had the same design as one of the pages I just described, but which had a very polite language, free of hype, and very professional. And after more than a year of other tests before we could do that test, we saw a major lift. Jimmy, what was the lift on that, the increase in conversion, do you recall?
Which site was it for? I'm looking at these landing pages.
It's none of these three. It was for the publisher that I can't tell you their name aloud without.
Credit card from free trial?
Yeah, yes.
It was 596%.
Okay. All right, Clint, so
Clint?
Yes.
Thank you. I mean, again, this is another example of a fairly mainstream company. I remember this is back in the 90s. When I was first working online, I was writing pop-ups for AOL. You know, when you used to sign on for AOL, there was software or a printer. I mean, I did hundreds of these, and they were all two-part, two-page. And we tested a few times. We tested all of them, but never once did we get a better conversion by putting the price on the first screen. It was always on the second screen. So the principle seems to apply whether it's long copy, whether it's a large corporate company, or whether indeed it's something like, you know, America Online selling software or printers or digital cameras.
Fascinating. Very good point. Very good. And so that kind of experience is what led to this next test. The idea was if we move the price deeper into the sales path, will we see a greater, more click-through and more people get into the process? At the same time, what is that going to do in terms of mitigating conversion? Will it improve or reduce conversion? So here's what we discovered. Take the chart, if you would, Brian, drop it in the notes and tell us when it's ready.
The chart for test three should be there now.
Okay. All right. What you'll notice is by removing the price from the landing page, we were able to get 25% more people at least one page deeper into the site, which is a success. But conversion dropped by 6.6%. So the test itself demonstrated a success that led to more or less a greater failure. Now, what would I do? And that's something that would be interesting. What would I test next, and how would I change this? I think getting 25% more people into the site is possible. If it was all, if I could do this differently, I would design the page so that the entire process was one page, the offer and the order, thereby mitigating both issues and putting the price closer to the bottom. But that's a whole different set of issues. We've done a lot in shopping cart recovery. In one experiment, we recovered 6,000 abandoned carts. And even today, we had people here in an experiment with MEC on the telephone contacting people who abandoned carts from a customer service standpoint. But these customer service people were getting paid, or a customer service person was getting paid a bonus for every single cart recovered. And so it's customer service, and there's no sales language, but there is a very motivated person trying to help that customer. And you don't have to use a phone to recover these things. In fact, that's our last resort, but you'll discover some of that in these other experiments that are listed in your links and in your notes. What numbers are those, Brian?
I'm sorry, Flynn, I was answering.
Shopping cart recovery and abandoned cart recovery.
Those are 7 and 8 in the.
Yeah. I'll also tell you, and we're getting ready to move into talking about guidelines, and we're getting ready to look at some of the pages that you've sent us, I think. But let me just point out a couple of other things for you. All of these articles that I'm talking about are free. These links are not to something that we have to sell you other than the certification course that we offer. These are all here, and you can get the information, and they're full reports, and they're full of data, and they're, if they'll help you, then we're really, that's our mission. So with that in mind, I'd like to do this. I'm going to answer a few questions at the start, and then we're going to move into something more important, and that is, what are some of the best practice, our research learnings? Because this word best practices is thrown around all the time, but mostly it's thrown around as advice and not as test findings. For us, we are constantly building this knowledge base of best practices, and it grows out of all of the testing that we're doing. And we want to talk to you about things, about steps you can take right after you get off this call, or over the next week or two, to impact the conversion ratio of your landing pages. I'm going to be looking at a live landing page, and Jimmy, how are you coming? Have you selected some landing pages?
I've got one with comments and suggestions, and I'm working on a second one right now. I mean, I could send this one while we're.
Send me one of them over, Jimmy. Send me one of them over, and in a minute we're going to look at that one. And as Jimmy's doing that live, I'm going to go ahead and answer some questions, and we're going to kind of alternate back and forth between your questions, between the landing pages that we're thinking and talking about together, and between the actual notes and guidelines that we're going to be dropping into your files that we hope will help you. So with that in mind, let's look first of all at a couple of questions that have come in while we're talking. First of all, we have a man named Alan who wrote us and said, I'd like basically for you to explain iPath a bit relative to this page. He's talking about the page we looked at on the hypnosis side, but Alan, if you will, I'm going to answer that question live, working with a real page, one that we'll be working with today. None of us have seen this page before you guys sent it to us. So as we work on it together, we'll discuss iPath in a very relevant way and perhaps answer that question directly then. And there's another question here. Why is there so much information below the fold on the new page? And why is the submit button below the fold? That is a good question, and it's interesting. Every time I go into a Fortune 100 company, Fortune 500 company, if they don't know anything about optimization based on the conversion indexes that we work with, which are actual formulas that you apply to optimize a page, the one thing they're worried about is the below the fold. I think that comes because it was common in, first of all, in offline advertising in print. And secondly, fold is obviously an offline term. And secondly, because it became kind of one of those internet truisms that was passed around in marketing department after marketing department. Candidly, I think that having a submit button below the fold has very little to do to impact conversion in most cases if you have the right stuff above the fold. But the contingency in that statement is what you have above the fold. We test it in both ways, but when you ask people to make a decision before you give them the information they need to make the decision, you're hurting your own conversion rate. And so, Brian, that's the reasoning behind this. We've tested it over and over and over again. Am I saying that it's not good? No, I would prefer it above the fold. If I can make the entire move, if I can make build the case, if I can accomplish the objective in that first minor screen that I have, I'll do it. But in most cases, the dangerous pages are too short, not too long. Over and over again, we've improved them that way. And we worked with one publisher. Well, we've worked with so many on this and seen it over and over and over again. And I would just suggest that that doesn't mean that in your particular situation it's wrong. It just means that don't trust the truism. Test it. Test it, test it, test it. So onward we go. I've got another question from Michael. It says, should the landing page be included in the site navigation and sitemap? Michael, in a perfect world, the landing page is your home page. And every other page that a search engine could send some traffic to is a landing page. If at all possible, always work for the minimum amount of clicks between you and the credit card. It should be concept to money in as short a possible route. So, yes, you can put the landing page in the left nav, but I would constantly be working to reduce what we call friction. And one of the things that causes friction is clicks. Another one is the number of fields associated with getting the order complete. Reduce the friction. All right, so I've got to move on. I've got a good question about statistical significance, and I'm doing a lecture on that. And so is David Riley, who's a professor of economics at University of Arizona. David's brilliant, and we're teaching that tomorrow in the certification program that we did last, the one that was from 2 months ago that you may have heard about. It's finishing up, but tomorrow's the third or next to the last session, and so we're teaching it. It's a very involved question. We've built a spreadsheet that we utilize within a test protocol document for a test, and it calculates it automatically for you. I can tell you more, Darren, in a separate conversation or via email afterwards, or in some way to help you. But I'll lose my audience here if I get too much into the math at this moment. All right, so I think that what we want to do is look at a live site and also teach. So let's look at a live site. And Brian, did you get the site that Jimmy sent over?
I'm seeing it now, and I'll add it in the next few moments.
Okay. Brian's going to drop a link into your notes. We've never seen this page before. We're going to work on optimizing it together.
Please have it in your email as well.
I do. I'm looking at it.
Comments.
Okay. And Jimmy's made 3 or 4 opening comments in here. I'm going to let Jimmy talk himself here in just a moment. Jimmy's our director of optimization. He used he's brilliant. And I'm going to let him talk a little bit about what he would do with this page. And I like the page he's picked. It's not an ugly page. It's not been built by a rank amateur. It looks to me like it's already had optimization. In fact, I can tell you right now it's had optimization work. So what would you do if this was your page and it was performing well? How would you improve a page that already looks this good? And Jimmy, I'm going to let you go to work on it, okay? And all I can say, I'll just say the first name, Laura, you won the lottery. You're going to get all of this live, and I just want to ask for one favor from you. We have to be critical now to help make the point and study this, and you probably didn't design this page yourself, but my point would be we don't mean to disparage anybody's work that's gone into this already. We'll just work on it together live and talk about some of these things, and then we'll begin to use this page to teach, and at the same point, we'll go back to some of the key points. Jimmy, go ahead.
All right. So, I, like I said, we just picked this page out, and I'm just going to kind of go through this kind of rough and ready as I went through it when I first saw the page. So when I opened the page up, I opened it up in Firefox, and these are just my comments as I would go through the page. And the first thing that I noticed was that the page doesn't display right in Firefox. The top right text that says the best place to be a mom actually cuts off halfway, And for a lot of times, if your page has these little errors or breaks, a lot of times people think that it's not professional or it's not a quality site. A lot of times they would just head out immediately and be like, okay, I'm in the wrong place. And the other thing you're going to notice is that the forgot your password top right link doesn't actually display right either. And so if anyone was on the site and they're using Firefox and they're trying to get their password again, they might not see all the text and might not be able to find it. So there's a couple little usability things. But in regards to the site and the product, what I see is a very, very professional, very clean site. But when I'm looking for the things that are going to make me want to buy this product, well, my first question I ask myself is what do I get? So you have a one-year subscription for $24. What do I get for this for my $24? And I was reading through the information, and the fact that I couldn't scan and instantly know just kind of alarmed me. So I look at this nice professional image. I see the mom with the baby. It's a great image. I Feel Life. There's a lot of things you could put there that have more value towards the product that you could possibly use. But I don't see any clearly defined headline, because the site is called Pregnancy and Baby Plus, but that doesn't mean anything to the customer yet. They just know that it's about pregnancy and babies. So I'm scanning through the page. There's a start now, and I'm seeing that before I've actually seen the things that are going to sell me on this page. So I keep scrolling down the information, and I see another kind of like a subheadline, just what you need when you need it most. And that's a very stylish headline, but there's still, once again, there's no selling points in it, because it's just what you need for what. I still don't even know what I'm getting. I mean, I could read that small text that's in the pink right above enjoy a one-year subscription for $24, but I still don't. It does, that needs, the thing that you want the customer to see need to really pop. And so here's what I saw on the page. I finally got to the orange circle bullets, bottom left, and that's where all the good information is that's really going to sell this information. And a customer, when he gets to this page, he needs to see that before he sees someone asking them for $24 for a subscription. So those bullets have a lot of value. So you have a week-by-week developmental calendar for pregnancy and baby's first year, your own photo journal, how-to guides, product raise and recalls, coupons and specials, mom sharing support, and personalized pregnancy or baby or pregnancy stage or baby's age. Those are the things, the little components of what do I get for $24? It's right there. And if I were to use a different headline right under that pregnancy and baby plus, my main headline on the page would be something like, this is one I just wrote up real quick, something like a step-by-step guide through pregnancy and baby's first year for moms. So what it's saying is, it's a step-by-step guide through pregnancy. It's instantly know exactly what it is for your baby's first year. So not only through pregnancy, but your baby's first year, and it's for moms. In one sentence, you pretty much sum up what the whole site is about in one shot, without having people to figure it out. They should instantly be able to scan that headline and instantly know 80% of what the site is.
5 seconds.
In 5 seconds, you got it.
And they're looking at this site right now. They're looking at it when they first come to it and searching for a reason to dismiss it and move on, because they're overwhelmed with information. You've got to do something in those 5 seconds to stop them. And if they have to work too hard, you've already lost them.
Yeah, funny. It's Nick here. I agree with everything Jimmy said, and it's strange here, because the design of the page, the actual eye path where your eye is drawn, actually takes you away from the.
That's exactly right. The eye path's totally wrong.
It draws you. You've got the image, and then, like Jimmy says, you know, give me $24. Well, I've no idea what I'm paying for yet. I'm drawn down to the March of Dimes. I'm drawn down to the sneak preview. So my attention is scattered, but if there is an eye path, it's actually diverting me from the information that is actually useful for me.
Yep.
It's just another way of saying what Jimmy was saying. I agree completely, and I like his headline, because it answers that important question of when people first arrive at a page, tell them what is there. Tell them what it's about. Let them, give them a clue that they're on the right page, that it's relevant and interesting to them.
Let me just say this. Jimmy's, because of our time, I just want to point out some things for you, okay? To everybody that's listening, let's suppose that we had this project together. The first thing we do is take this page and print it. Then I'd ask, what is the objective of the page? In this case, it's to start the subscription process, to get a click on the Start Now button, I would think. If that's the case, I would think to myself, okay, if that's the objective, every single element on this page must serve that objective. As Nick has pointed out, first of all, you've got competing buttons. The two buttons on the right are more dominant than the blue button because of their color and because there's two of them, and worse, because there's two of them, you're asking to make a decision between three buttons. Secondly, the layout is horizontal as opposed to vertical, and if this was in an ideal form, this would be a letter, Dear So-and-so. It would be from a mother to a mother. It would be written in a vertical format, not too terribly long, emphasizing the key benefits and using the Start Now button towards the end of the process, towards the end of the letter, and it wouldn't say start now. It would tell them what they could get now, not what they'd have to start doing. Start now could be start paying, start receiving, start. What does start now mean? It would imply the benefit. Jimmy's right. The image is good, but it wastes too much valuable space. You could accomplish the same feel good without that much of real estate, particularly in the top left corner, which is the most valuable piece of real estate on the entire page. Because this is a personal thing, the tone of the letter, written by a good copywriter, would make an expectant mother or a mother who would, you know, whoever's the ideal, I'm assuming it's an expectant mother without getting into this too deeply, or someone who is hoping to be an expectant mother or a new mom, whatever the case, it needs to have that personal tone. People sell, not web pages. People sell. This page needs to have the personality and the voice of a real person who your prospective customer would both like and trust. So I think iPath is 50% of this battle, and the other 40% is copy on this particular page. And I would get rid of competing things. March of Dimes, I don't know if that's a testimonial. I don't know what it is. It's confusing. If you're going to use it, minimize it because it's taking too much of the attention away from the main event. Sneak previews should probably just be text links in the letter or offered below or near the button if you think someone's not satisfied, and they should only be pop-ups and not take them off the page.
Flint, I'd just like to make one other point about the copy. And again, Jimmy referred to one or two pieces of this, but things like the best place to be a mum, then in that small piece of black text underneath, celebrate and share the new bundle of joy in your life, and then just what you need when you need. This is kind of decorative copy. This is copy that you associate more with awareness advertising. But in terms of a page where you want people to take an action and do something, it's wasted words. It's cotton wool. It's just floating around, looking and sounding decorative, but serving no purpose.
No, I agree. And Jimmy's got other points. Jimmy, you want to say finish up what you're thinking also before I'm going to move to some of these other points. We may do another page if we have time and talk more about it. But go ahead, Jimmy.
Sure. I just had a few more things. I mean, another thing is, you know, we continually push this point is to capture an email address on this page. It would be very simple and easy to make the first step of this process below or above the Start Now button, you know, enter your email address to get started or to create your username and password or to get the preview. So give some either white paper or a giveaway or something to capture email address. So even if they don't purchase, you can still have them on a list. You can email back to them helpful information about pregnancy in the hopes of getting them back to your site to subscribe. And then
go ahead.
No, I mean, if I were to say what happened with this page is typically what we see when a designer designs a page. It's very visually appealing. But they didn't understand the effectiveness of a page and how copy flows and how the different elements need to be weighted. And they haven't seen the results, basically the learning that you get by running tests and seeing what happens when you run split tests and test copy and headlines and these things. So, like I said, it's a very, very professional, clean page, but there's a lot of things that would really make an impact on the conversion.
Yeah, good, Jimmy. Very good. All right, well, let's do this. Brian, I'm going to begin to touch some of the key points. Gentlemen, you help me as we talk. Brian, some of these I'm not going to say. I'm just going to have you drop them into their notes. Bear in mind that you can get this clinic free, again, the recording of it, and listen to it with your team. You can also get the report that we'll be releasing within the next week. It'll go out next week, and the full report will have everything we're discussing in here, except this live type of critique, but it'll have all of our notes and data, and more actually than probably what we'll cover on the phone, and you'll be able to read that at your leisure as well. And but let me go on. The first thing has to do with sending people to the right landing pages, and rather than read that key point, Brian, I'm going to ask you to just drop that directly in the notes. Just if my listeners, if you'll just refresh your pages from time to time. And Jimmy, you may get another page we may want to look at before we're done if we have time. And I am going to take a few more questions, so you can keep sending questions. I'm queuing up some that are coming in now. Number two, one is going to be appearing in your notes. I'm going to talk about another point right now. Make an effort to understand your traffic. Define the major sources of incoming traffic to your site and be as specific as possible. You're going to hear me. I said this in Chicago recently when I was lecturing at Emailers Conference. Specificity converts. The more specific your offer is to your audience, the higher your conversion ratio. Identify any good source of traffic and make certain that you're customizing the landing page for that particular source. If you've used a search term that's driven people to a page, get that search term in the headline of the landing page. It will improve conversion. I think most of us are aware of that. Depending on your experience in the market, that's something we know. But what I discover is very few of us are actually taking the trouble to get these optimized landing pages, and they can be the basic core landing page just reproduced with minor changes into the headline or critical elements that identify with the audience. Also, try and think through why they clicked through to the page. And it's a good point. Did you have the lowest price? Was it that you had the best company rating on the, if they came from a comparison search engine, was your rating better than everyone else? Was it because of your selection? What was it about the ad that attracted the click-through? Did you have a special promotion? Whatever that is, emphasize that main reason when they get to your page, and then use the rest of your copy to minimize any reason they might have for not buying from you, and then drive them into the process with urgency. Here's another point. Using the information, and I think we've talked about this just now, developed in point two, design your landing pages around the reason they clicked through. If you have the lowest price, make sure you include the headline text, such as the lowest price on dealtime.com. There's a lot of interesting things you can do. Jimmy recalls in the old days we took a retailer and generated the lowest price survey. And we essentially knew because this retailer had the lowest price in the market, we could do this. We designed a survey across the internet, and we did it as a 4.0, 6 p.m. On Thursday, the lowest price on the top 10 items. And we picked items like from PC Mag because it was a computer, and we identified where they were on the internet. And maybe only 6 or 8 out of 10 of them were with the retailer that we were doing this research with, and the others were competitors. But it worked. Jimmy was there. We did the mailing on a Wednesday, and Thursday was a record day in sales. And then we did it again 2 weeks later. Jimmy, correct me if I'm wrong. Same thing.
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely. Every time we sent it out, we'd have either a record day or a huge increase over like a 1 to 3 day span, because people getting the emails at different times and coming back and purchasing at different times. It was definitely something that was working for us.
One of the things we talked about, and this is the fourth point, when we looked at the page that we were optimizing together just a moment ago, is the hook. You'll notice this page right now isn't doing any of the things we've described so far, and one of the things that it's not doing is doing anything to capture my attention within the first few seconds and give me a reason why I should not press the click button. We are living in a world where the customer can click away your revenue so fast that unless you have got a way to, first of all, identify that it's the right customer and then speak the right message to them, you're going to lose them before you even get a chance to get them into the core of your offer. And you need to emphasize with great clarity, and this is part of our actual math formula or that we use, but it's not that you have a value proposition. It's hard enough to find one of those. But a lot of people who have one don't know how to say it in a sentence. Clever doesn't matter. Rhyming doesn't matter. Trite alliteration doesn't matter. Tell me in one credible sentence with quantifiable information why I should buy from you as opposed to anyone else. It doesn't matter if you're in a service business, it doesn't matter if you're a retailer. That's the point I need to know most of all if you're going to get me to get into this page and eventually click on a button. So then, besides click-specific information, you should also emphasize among the key areas of this value proposition your product guarantees, discounted shipping, same-day or next-day shipping, special offer or sell information, exceptional customer service or satisfaction guarantees, free trials, no-risk offers. Use all of that, but build it and craft it around the core of a value proposition that is irresistible to the particular segment of the audience that you are most trying to reach. Now, I'm going to just stop for a moment, take some questions, see if I can help. So I've had several questions about being in the service business. The principles here apply exactly the same to the service business. Either you're generating leads for that service, particularly if it's an expensive service, at which point every element on the page needs to serve to capture the lead. And if it does do so, make certain you're not trying to qualify your leads on the page you're doing the capture with. Qualify them on a second page. First, get as many possible into the bucket. Then filter them with your qualification process. But if you try to filter them and capture them on the same page, you've got conflicting objectives and you'll have mitigated conversion and you'll make less money at the end of the month. I know you can't just throw the channel open to inexpensive or low-quality leads because it's costly for you to work those leads. But you don't have to do that. Use phase one to get every lead on the internet you can get. Use phase two to qualify them. And that way you can measure the success of each action. We conflate the two and we get poor results. Let me go on to, this is someone, just a second, I'm checking this. This is a question. I think it's more of a statement regarding another one here. And then I'm looking at a site that's come in with another question. And the questions are so long, Jimmy, I'm having to read them before I know which ones I can tackle in the amount of time that I have, yes. One of these questions is from Brian. It says, who do we use to do the A-B and multivariate testing? Most of our testing we do on our platformers. We experiment with a variety of third-party vendors, but we have our own testing platform that we've built. There are certain things that we do on a partner's platform, and there are times when we'll bring in a third-party vendor. But it's not that difficult to set up, for instance, A-B split testing on your own platform. And if you need further help with that, email us, and we'll think of, you know, maybe a more specific answer that we can give you.
One thing, Flint, that they could check is just to go to the A-B split testing brief in the URLs, and we should have a series of vendors listed there. That's link number 4.
Yes. Yes. Another person asked about the wording on an add to cart button and that it's critical. Yes, and they asked to elaborate on that. What do we mean? Michael, you want them, you're asking them to do an action. In fact, let me go a bit deeper than I have in my notes here. Please know something. Every action you ask a customer to take has its own independent sub-value proposition. We all talk about value propositions, and we mean the main value proposition of the product. But on that same company, when you ask me for my email address, I am weighing whether or not to give it to you. And it has not a lot to do with whether or not you make the world's greatest tennis balls. It has to do with my concern about my privacy and whether it's worth giving you my email address for the information you promised to give me in exchange. That is an independent, separate sub-value proposition. Now, every button on a website has its own value proposition. Why do you want me to click? Give me a good reason to click. Don't just tell me to click. Give me a reason to click. Okay, there's two things I want. I want your product. I want it now. So the second thing, that second word, that now, is immediacy, and the second thing is, and the first thing is the product. Any way you can phrase a button so that it promises what they want now, you've got a better button. And it makes a big difference as to what your click-through will be. All right, let me keep going here. Number, Brian, how many of you dropped into their notes now?
I've dropped through number 7. I wasn't sure how.
That's all right.
Okay.
Number 5 in your notes talks about credibility indicators. Third-party credibility indicators are one of the most effective ways to communicate and that you have a reputable company. We've coined this phrase, credibility indicator. I think it was 2 or 3 years ago. And what we're looking at with that phrase is something, I think we coined it. I don't want to take credit if we did, but it seems like we did. We were looking for a way to say that there was a variety of different ways to relieve the anxiety of a customer at the point or that precise moment in the process where they are starting to fear or worry. There is always anxiety in this process. Identify the anxiety and put a credibility indicator right next to the anxiety point. For instance, you ask for their credit card. They're afraid, well, what's customer service like? Put a testimonial about how great customer service is so they know it's easy to cancel. Put a customer service number from the Better Business Bureau. That's another type of credibility indicator. Put your rating on. You may have a Yahoo store, and you may be 5-star rated in Yahoo store, and you may have another site that has nothing to do with Yahoo. But take your 5 stars from Yahoo and stick it over on this other store and say ranked 5 stars for customer service in Yahoo, and put it right next to the point where they're going to be most afraid. That's how we use credibility indicators. Nick, Jimmy, I can move on, but you have any thoughts about these first 7 points, or otherwise you want to go ahead and say?
No, Nick here. I think that sounds good.
Okay. All right. So, do not, point 7 says, in fact, I better point out point 6. I mentioned it. I think we don't have to say it too much because I sometimes get up on my Teddy Roosevelt-like pulpit and complain about the hype that's on the internet. Read this issue. If you don't read anything else we've written, read something that's not a research report as much as it is an essay on the language to use in marketing. It's called Transparent Marketing. The link is in there. Again, it's free. It talks to you about a new way to talk to your customers, and you've better learn this way because the postmodern consumer is not going to buy the same hype that he bought 10 years ago. And if you doubt that, look back at what you could sell with 30 years ago because you can't use that language anymore. And you need to understand the evolving language of the market. Read this. I've written it probably 3 years ago, but it's still valid today. It's called Transparent Marketing. Don't use hype. Quantify. Don't use an adjective that you can't quantify. Any modifiers, if they're not quantitative, that means, you know, something you can assign a number to. Where, don't tell me you're fast. Tell me you're 74.2 seconds. If you can't quantify it, if it's a qualitative statement like you're fast but you can't measure it and you don't have any way to prove it to people, then quote somebody else who's credible saying that you're fast. But nobody likes the person who brags about themselves, and we don't trust you anymore. We don't trust you because we're hearing so many people and so many marketing messages, we think you're lying to us now. And so we need you to make it easy for us to believe you. Part of that is the tone of your language. And that's what transparent marketing is about, and that's what number 6 is about. And we say it very succinctly here, but it's very important. Number 7 is critical, too. You can overwhelm people with information. I'm the guy that just said use long copy pages more often than not. But you can present copy so that it's clustered properly in short, small clusters. And those clusters will help you to communicate far more effectively. In fact, I'm going to stand up and walk over to my library. I'm actually in my library right now. There's a book. I don't have any interest in the book, and I've never talked to the author, but you ought to get it. It's by Bruce Ross Larson, Ross-Larson, Larson. It's called Writing for the Information Age. Some of you, if you're a writer, you're familiar with the classic books on writing like Strunk and White, The Elements of Style. This is more important to you than The Elements of Style. Get Writing for the Information Age by Larson. It's he understands instinctively and through a lot of research the way to present information in small clusters that are easy for people to obtain. What you have to do on the internet is break into small clusters and then put it back together right at the end with a succinct summary with strong IPath if you're going to communicate well to them. And you want to do that in your copy, and that's a book that will help you. Also, there's one of the best ways I've seen, if you want to learn from an example, and I've never heard anybody recommend this, there's a group on the internet called Sticky Books, STICKYBOOKS.com, stickybooks.com. By the way, I'm not a member of anybody's affiliate program, and I don't know these people either, but they have a very, very well-tested style of teaching in those books that is perfect for the web. Get their book on astronomy or identifying trees and learn from it if you're a copywriter. Learn from it. Learn how to digest that information, repeat it properly, cluster it in the right order, and, you know, you'll find it really useful. Not only that, but take one of the books home and use it with your children, and you'll be amazed at how quickly they learn things because of this approach. All right, so I move on from that to number eight. Test your background. In fact, I'm running out of time, guys. Drop all the points in the notes, Brian.
Okay.
And there's questions. Here's what I promise you. If you send us a question, and we can't answer it right now, we'll post it in the blog and we'll send you back a reply. We'll post a question in the blog and we'll post the answers in it. It's hard because a lot of questions come here, but we want to help you. And if you can get the information to us, we'll try to give you our best answer, or we'll tell you we don't know the answer, or we'll make an experiment and design it so we can learn the answer. We're constantly coming up with things that we need to research because of questions that are raised for us. Gentlemen, I think that I might need to bring things to a close. Jimmy's already identified another page and with lots of ideas about how to improve it, and I wish I had the time to go into that. 4:58. I'm supposed to stop at 5. Okay, this is what I'll do. I'm going to invest just a few more minutes, and I'm going to go over time with those of you that would like to stay on the line. We're going to look at this page as the last thing. We're going to apply some of the things we're learning. You can look at those notes. There's a lot more on landing pages, and we have a special formula for optimizing landing pages also, which we can't cover today, but we can look at one last landing page and throw some comments there. Brian, post it in the blog.
Sure. I've already added it as link number 10 in the URL list.
I'm probably doubling my I think we have an hour set aside, and I'm just going to do this anyway. I'm going to take a few minutes. I want to make sure that we haven't overwhelmed you today and that you're getting practical things you can take away with. So we're going to look at this page. It was submitted to us by a gentleman named Scott, and it's called warrantydirect.com, and it's a particular page on their site. Click on the link, and you'll get to the page that we are on. And I'm going to let Jimmy and Nick beat up this page for just a few moments. And you that have been listening with us, perhaps you can learn a little bit more from the dialogue. Go ahead, gentlemen.
Well, this is another page that we picked, and there's a couple different ways to look at it. It depends on where a customer is coming from. So if they're coming from the warrantydirect.com homepage, it's not going to be quite the same as if they're sending pay-per-click traffic to this page. But what I saw as a fresh new page, I saw the clean design, and I see Warranty Direct, most trusted partner. And my first questions were, the most trusted provider of what? And then I went immediately to the nice image. And you can save up to 60%, get a quote today, but save up to 60% on what? I still don't know what the product is yet. And then my iPath goes from the Warranty Direct to the People's Photo to the 60% right to get an instant quote, which is a good iPath if you're able to achieve your objective of basically convincing them that you should get a quote from them about, and this product is actually automobile warranties, which you don't see until you get to the small text in that gray box. But if I had convinced people by then, I've done a really good job of letting them know that they should get a quote and it's gonna save them money, then that iPath would work. But in this instance, I don't think that's happened yet. Unless you came from a page where you know your landing page is only about automobile warranties, you'd say you can save up to 60% on an auto warranty or for auto warranties or something with auto warranties, the most trusted provider of auto warranties. So all the messaging needs to ring true to the, hey, this is about auto warranties, and I'm going to save money on it. When I first see through this page, because we've done a lot of pages like this where it's lead generation and email captures and instant quotes and stuff, It says, if I go down to where it says savings, it says exclusive for AutoExtra visitors, save 51 to 201 on what? Is that on an auto warranty? Is that something else? Because right below it, it says secure care coverage and emissions for only $49. Like, I don't know what secure care coverage is. And then when I look at, like, the most of the copy that tells what it is right below that really good image, right after, like, so you go from the 60% to get an instant quote, and you got to come back and read that small text to really find out what the page is about. And there's some good selling points in there, and then it says, you know, what's new. But those links, those four sections, there's actually four sections of content there. And some of you looking at the page might not even realize it, but those are good content sections that are going to help sell this product, but you don't even really know if it's very clickable. Like, I can't tell if there was a link or not until I clicked on them and I realized, oh, this is other supporting information. Another really interesting thing on this page is that the credibility indicators, which they have some great ones on here, which is Web Assured, BBB Online, Privacy, the BBB Privacy Policy, and the Verifying on the very bottom, are at the very bottom. And there's a really interesting case study done from Sherpa that tested these credibility indicators. And the best, highest converting location for these was top left, or in this case, if you were to keep this design, you'd do something top right where people would be sure to see the credibility indicator when they came to the site, but they're minimized down there. So those are some of the same things we talked about. It's communication of, like, the headline, which would be basically you can save up to 60%, get a quote today. It still doesn't tell what the product is and doesn't communicate that through the page. Now we've also done a test on horizontal versus vertical layouts, which I was talking about earlier. This is another example of that, where we have a nice, clean, professional page. You say, man, this is an effective page, but every time that we've tested a design like this, we've removed that quote to the bottom of the page after the customer has gone through all the important content and the selling points and why they should get a quote from Warranty Direct. Then you hit them with the form, and almost every case, it has a significant impact on conversion. And in our previous test, which is on our site, it was actually the design that was horizontal versus vertical with the same exact copy, same exact forms, everything, was like a 44% decrease in conversion when it was horizontal versus vertical, which is, you know, that's pretty dramatic.
Jimmy's right. He's really right. This is all wrong for the eyes. It's all wrong, and there's an enormous amount of wasted space in the way the page is designed. It's just all wrong for the eyes. I'll bet you we could double conversion on this page within two experiments. And it probably works all right. It's just how much money is being lost every single day until they've optimized it to the fullest. And I'm not blaming anyone. We're always, MEseek is always improving its own things right now. We have a new version of our pages going up. But it just, it's exciting when you can see how much money could be generated if this thing is altered. Dink, you had any thoughts before we close?
Well, just... I agree with everything that Jimmy was saying, and I still quite haven't figured out what the product is, even though I realize it's now for cars, because it hasn't answered me the question anyway here. Well, I already have a warranty for my car. That aside, and I'd just confirm everything that Jimmy and you were saying, that there are just two small points I would make. One is I would test it with and without the daytime phone number, because that's a point of friction there. Ask me my name and my email, yes. When you ask me my phone number, it's a whole different story, because I'm going to be scared. I'm going to be caught up with some high-pressure salesperson on the phone for half an hour. The other small point I would make is at the end of the bottom of the right-hand column there, there's one testimonial. I think the use of a testimonial is a good idea. I think that particular testimonial is, I would be cautious there. I think that particular one could work very well for one group of people, and there'll be a whole other group of people who will find that emotionally manipulative and react negatively to it.
True, yeah, so true. Attest to that, yeah.
Just be really careful with what you put in your testimonials.
Yeah, and you need to match the nature of the testimonial to the exact anxiety you're dealing with.
That's a whole different, it takes your mind off into a whole different area.
It does, absolutely.
It's nothing to do with cars. It can be perceived as being emotionally manipulative and it's distracting, and I would change it. I would just change the content of it. I would rewrite it. You can't do that, but I would choose a different testimonial.
Let me suggest this. When we're gonna close out now, help me with one last thing. I need you to send me feedback today and tell me if this approach has been helpful for you, if you like looking at the real pages. Could you let us know, because we're trying hard and I don't have a survey system set up yet. I'm getting ready to do that for everyone that attends these clinics, where you can do a post survey and let us know where we're, how we're doing on key components. But we just moved ourselves to our own brand new content management system, and we're still working through its details and perfecting all of its components. So if you could just take a moment, shoot an email to us and tell us if today's helped you, we would be grateful. If we didn't get to your question, I apologize. I promise you we'll do our best to answer it privately, and we'll try to get anything that seems like it might help our audience. We'll get that answer in the blog so people can come back and read that. We'll be releasing this report next week, and you'll be able to read it. And we invite you to just get into the site. Everything's free there, and see if the information that you find will help you. And we appreciate your trust. Thank you so very much, and we shall talk to you again in about 2 weeks.